I'm feeling a little productive today.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's the morning open, a look at the broader economy as we start the trading day about 20 minutes in. More production, the bad loans still on the books, and GM plugs into better fuel economy. Let's ask the question right now. Where's Wall Street? Market's down right now pretty uniformly. The S&P 500, NASDAQ, and Dow all down about 0.8%. European shares lower right now, too, about 1% each. And another day of gains in Asia. The Hang Seng and Nikkei up under 1% overseas. We learned today the nation's productivity has been surging. The Labor Department says output in the second quarter rose by the largest amount in 6 years. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research. He's joining us live from Washington. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
So this big increase in productivity seems like this could be a little counterintuitive for a recession. What do you make of it?
Well, this recession's been different in that regard. Not only has labor productivity continued to increase, but it's increased very rapidly. However, in the second quarter, this 6.4% gain is really extraordinary. And historically, that's what you see at the turn in the business cycle. Employment is a lagging indicator, so after the economy has begun to stabilize, businesses are typically still trimming payrolls. That means more output per worker. And historically, again, if we look back at the past two, three, four recessions, we've had this kind of explosion of productivity growth just about when the recession came to an end.
Yeah, you're talking about jobs, too, and a lot of people talking about a jobless recovery, right?
Well, that's possible. Historically, it's been just a couple of months after recessions end that jobs pick up. In the last recession, 2001, it was closer to 2 years. My own view is that it's going to be somewhere in between. I think we'll start to see jobs grow by the end of this year, and that's in part because of this productivity news. Businesses have been so aggressive at keeping payrolls trimmed and in line with declining demand that when we get that turn in output, jobs should not be too far along.
And we talk about stabilization, Richard. We get a reminder we're not out of the woods yet. The latest comes from the TARP, you know, the Troubled Asset Relief Program watchdog group this morning in Congress. The oversight panel warns in a new report that banks still hold billions of dollars of risky loans. Here's what the head of that panel, Elizabeth Warren, told us this morning on the Marketplace Morning Report.
Small banks hold a lot of commercial real estate loans, which pose a real threat of high defaults in the near future. So since small banks have more trouble raising capital, we raise a particular alarm about the position they may be in.
So what's the answer to that problem, Richard?
Well, you know, unfortunately, there are no easy answers. In the report, Ms. Warren mentions, though does not specifically endorse, a return to what we saw in the early 90s with the Resolution Trust Corporation, wherein the government actually took possession of these assets. That's going to cost a lot of money, and none of the solutions that are being proposed are easy or cheap. So I think what they're really arguing most aggressively for is more of the same. Get the economy moving along, grow jobs. When we grow jobs, that means more people will be occupying the space. Rent comes up, defaults diminish.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have to cut it off there. Richard DeKayser, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Steve.
All right. The new General Motors plans to introduce a 230, you heard me right, 230 mile per gallon car, mostly electric but part gasoline-powered automobile. The battery pack can be recharged just from a standard home outlet. Reporter Tamara Keith joins us for a quick update live right now to talk about this from Washington. Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning.
Has this mileage figure been tested by the EPA yet?
No, not yet. This is the Chevy Volt that we're talking about here, and they haven't tested it yet. We also don't know what the combined city highway mileage figure would be, but it will likely still be in the triple figures, which is significantly more efficient than the popular Toyota Prius, which is a gas-electric hybrid that doesn't plug in unless it's been modified.
But the Volt will be a lot more expensive than the Prius.
Exactly. It'll be about $40,000, which is a lot more money. So people will be buying it to make an environmental statement rather than an economic one. And really, that's what this is for GM, too. It's an environmental statement post-bankruptcy. It's trying to green its image a bit.
Yeah, but talk about green. You know, this news coming out as we get this story that GM's not being so green.
That's right. There's an AP story that says that GM is dropping out of a program designed to prevent mercury pollution. That basically the new GM is saying, hey, we're brand new. We've never had a problem with mercury in our cars.
Well, some logic there, I guess.
Well, yeah.
All right, reporter Tamara Keith joining us this morning from Washington. Tamara, thanks.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, August 11th, 2009 at Marketplace.org. We're still waiting to hear what kind of deal will be struck between the United States and the Swiss bank UBS, the U.S. not the only country going after tax havens. As Christopher Worth reports, the Brits are signing a deal with another country today that will flush out wealthy tax evaders.
You're not alone if you have a tough time finding Liechtenstein on the map. It's just a tiny alpine country squeezed between Switzerland and Austria, but it holds billions in secret accounts. The British government estimates wealthy Britons have nearly $5 billion stashed away there. And as budget deficits rise to extraordinary levels, tax officials want their piece of the pie. They're offering tax dodgers the chance to volunteer their details and pay a penalty or risk further action. So would many wealthy investors take the government up on its offer? Cedric Thiel is with the Graduate Institute in Geneva.
Well, if the alternative is to face criminal prosecution, yes. I mean, basically, governments need money, and much more than they used to. So if you come and turn yourself in, basically, you pay a hefty fine. But that's the end of it.
Thiel questions just how much British officials are likely to reap. Most Liechtenstein account holders are from Germany, which has also been cracking down on the tax haven. Liechtenstein agreed to share tax information with the U.S. late last year. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and his colleagues meet in Washington today. One likely topic on the agenda is the commercial real estate market. That's because even as home prices stabilize, malls and office buildings around the country are emptying and values are plummeting. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Job losses have an indirect effect on residential real estate as people have a harder time paying their mortgages, but they directly impact commercial real estate as offices go vacant. Professor Susan Wachter at the Wharton School is keeping a close eye on the flailing commercial real estate market.
It is very dependent on jobs, and as jobs continue to be lost, the demand for real estate also is declining.
Wachter says rising defaults will hit regional banks the hardest. The Fed has already tried to ease the market by helping investors buy commercial mortgage-backed securities. But that emergency program expires in December. Chip Rogers with the Real Estate Roundtable is pushing the Fed to extend the program.
If the commercial real estate sector is not addressed in a positive way, the negative repercussions could undermine a lot of the progress that's been made by the Federal Reserve in stabilizing the financial system.
Chairman Bernanke recently said the government may have to consider guaranteeing commercial mortgages. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Oil prices are on the rise again, and that's driving up gasoline prices at the pump. 16 cents a gallon up in the past 2 weeks alone. That seems to fly in the face of Econ 101. We are in a recession. Demand is weak and prices should be falling. Jill Barchet reports.
You need to peer into the future to understand why oil prices have doubled over the last 6 months. David Kirsch is the director of market intelligence at PFC Energy. He says energy traders are betting that economic activity will pick up.
And as that picks up, the demand for crude oil, for gasoline, for diesel will pick up too.
China's already stepping on the gas and driving up energy costs. That's pinching pocketbooks in America and sparking worries that high oil prices could stifle our recovery. But Kirsch says oil is the least of our worries.
I think overall consumers are looking at the loss of value in their house and their total wealth and the very unsecure job market that's leading to much lower levels of consumer spending. And that's the primary cause of concern for the U.S. economy.
He points out that at $70 a barrel, oil is just half of what it was at its peak last year. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
You know, states are struggling to cut their budgets, and one place to look is prisons. It's expensive to lock people up, about $80 a day per prisoner. But politicians can end up paying a dear political price for letting prisoners out. So it's interesting that one of the places that's had the most success stabilizing the prison population is Texas, a state with a reputation for having some of the toughest penalties in the country. Reporter Michael May has more from Austin.
Over the past 30 years, Texas's prison population has grown about 8 times faster than its population. There are more than 150,000 people in Texas prisons today. 2 years ago, the Legislative Budget Board released a projection that Texas would need to house 17,000 more prisoners by 2012. Republican Representative Jerry Madden is chairman of the House Committee on Corrections.
That's very expensive. A new prison in Texas holds somewhere between 2,000 and 2,500 and runs us $250 to $300 million to build and roughly another $40 to $50 million a year to run and man.
Here's the math. The state would need to spend $2 billion building prisons, plus $300 million more a year to run them. So in 2007, the legislature overwhelmingly passed a series of reforms aimed at keeping people from rotating in and out of prisons. Madden says they're smart without being soft.
Oh, it was definitely tough. We put people who had drug problems, we put them into facilities to get treatment, which is much tougher for them than just going in, let's say, a short period of time in our state jails and going out without treatment. That's much tougher. We have not made it so that it's an easy thing in the prisons or reduced anything other than we've made it so that we put programs out there that may change lives.
The state invested in drug courts and programs for the mentally ill. Judges were given the flexibility to punish probation violators with community service instead of jail time. Scott Henson is a longtime criminal justice advocate in Texas. He says lawmakers should focus on probation because it costs less.
And with a lot more bang for the buck because their rehabilitation occurs in the community. When it's done, they're already there. There isn't the reentry barrier to get back over.
But Henson says there has been a barrier keeping other states from following Texas's example. He says rehabilitation programs often get caught up in political squabbles.
Most of these issues really are not very partisan when you get down to it. There's more common ground than the partisan game playing would have you immediately believe.
And here in Texas, the change in incarceration policy has had an economic return. The state won't need to build another prison until 2013. In Austin, I'm Michael May for Marketplace.
Latest reports today out of China show the country is on the way back. Industrial output and trade and retail sales all improved in the past month. Beijing is in the middle of a multi-billion dollar stimulus to provide medicine to the world's third largest economy. But there are some side effects to all the feel-good news. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Chinese factory production went up 11% over last year. Retail spending rose 15%. Credit the government's $600 billion stimulus package. Thing is, it's not clear all the money is being used the right way. China's stimulus is mostly government loans that pay for infrastructure projects. But economist Frank Song at the University of Hong Kong has a sneaking suspicion that some loans went to companies and individuals who played the stock market.
A part of that might be channeled into the stock markets and the real estate market. So this may create some risk if the bubble bursts.
If the bubble bursts, those government loans would go sour. Shanghai stock market is up 78% this year, and skeptics say the government stimulus has created what they call superficial exuberance. Frank Song also frets about wasteful spending on infrastructure projects.
A lot of these highways and the bridges, for example, there's not much traffic.
And without traffic, those projects could lose money. Another way the government loans could turn non-performing. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Finally, the hits just keep coming for Edward Williams, the lucky lottery hits. The Wichita, Kansas man won $75,000 back in September on a 10-buck scratch-off ticket. Last Wednesday, he hit another jackpot for a whole lot more money, $627,000 after taxes. And that works out to an early retirement for Mr. Williams. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day. We'll
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.